This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, it's RÚV English Radio. My name's Darren Adam. Thanks very much for your company today. It is Wednesday, and as we have our conversation, the rumours of another eruption on the Reykjanes Peninsula are starting to throb once again. We are maybe a week or two away from that happening. And of course, in recent weeks as well, we've heard about other volcanic areas in Iceland and the possibility of some eruptions in very different ways to that which we've seen across the Reykjanes Peninsula. So I can't think of a better time to catch up with Lady Love, with Raga, here at the Lava Show in Grandi in Reykjavik. There's another branch, if you will, in Vík in the south coast as well. But here we are in Reykjavik, and this is where lava is made. Not the lava that we see coming out of the volcanoes, but you make your own lava here. It's quite an incredible sight.
Yes, we basically take lava from nature that has already cooled down, and then we put it into a massive furnace and heat it up again. So we're basically remelting lava from a past eruption and then pouring it into a showroom full of people to experience up close in a safe environment.
And the wonderful noise that we're hearing is what looks like glass being brushed down the channel, I guess, towards the bottom of this area that people see when they sit here. We are going to see the furnace upstairs where that, I guess, this glass is turned back into lava. But what are we actually watching at the moment?
So the noise that we're hearing is actually volcanic glass. So you're right, it is glass, it's volcanic glass. And basically what we do when we have heated up the lava, we pour it into the showroom, and then a lava master essentially demonstrates how lava behaves in nature and explains, you know, what is happening at its moment it happens. Mm. So right in front of the audience's eyes. And as the lava cools down, and in this showroom, it's cooling down incredibly rapidly, especially because we also put ice on top of it.
Okay.
So we're like speeding up the cooling process. And when that happens, it also happens in nature actually, lava can turn into volcanic glass. And that is precisely what happens in this show. So now we have the lava melter essentially cleaning up the lava after the previous show to make basically the showroom ready for the next show, which happens in about 40 minutes or so.
Yeah, well, between shows at the moment, we're in, I guess, the theatre, you could say.
Yeah.
And all the seats are pointed towards the center of the room where this channel exists, and the lava drips down from the furnace, and there are safety goggles on all of the seats as well. When people see this, when they see lava being made, something that you only ever think of as happening as a natural process under the ground, what sort of response do people have?
Well, I think, you know, most people realize that lava is hot, right? So I think that that's the general expectation. But I think because it's so foreign, it's like I think people have, if they haven't been to the show before, I think people generally have a difficulty trying to visualize or imagine how it's going to be and what it's going to feel like. So I think even if people have like a general idea, yeah, sure, the lava must be hot, I think it still surprises them just how hot it is. Mm. Because, you know, you're sitting here maybe a meter and a half away from where the lava is going to come down, and you're in a relatively cool room in the beginning of the show, and then once the lava starts pouring in, the showroom instantly heats up.
I can feel the air conditioning is on here. Does it keep up?
It does, but I will tell you, we needed to put a very good ventilation system into this building.
Yes.
And I would say, the heat, I would say, is the biggest factor, but it's also because we darken down the showroom before the lava comes into it. Mm. And, it's also just seeing how incredibly bright it is. It's like neon colored in the beginning. Yeah. And then as the show goes on and the lava master is demonstrating and explaining what's happening, the lava takes on this orange glow and then slowly starts to become dimmer and dimmer and sort of blackish. Mm-hmm. And this is the process that happens in nature as well. So we're basically just speeding it up a little bit and explaining
How many times then will this lava or this lava glass or whatever state it happens to be at, how many times have you recycled it, do you think?
Well, there seems to be no limit to how many times we can recycle it. You know, I think it would be infinite times, really, because nothing is really leaving the lava. Only going from a molten state to a solid state and then back to a molten, etc. Yes.
And every scrap is being brushed up here,
I notice. Yeah. Exactly. Actually, the main reason why we sometimes do need to add a little bit is not because of the way that we make the lava. It's because we're actually selling pieces of it. So it's more because, like, pieces of it are being taken away by the audience, you know. So that's the main reason why we sometimes have to, you know, replenish a little bit and add a little bit to it. But other than that, you know, it's basically very green.
Well, let's take a wander around the facility a little bit. You've been here in Grandi for 2 years, and you've been in Vík on the south coast for 6 years. What was the original idea behind setting this up? Because 6 years ago, there wasn't quite the same interest in volcanic activity in Iceland, because it wasn't happening to the extent that it is now, I guess.
Well, I would say I would argue with that, actually. I think that people have always been fascinated with volcanoes. Sure, it's been a lot
more
lately.
Yes.
Yeah. Basically, I would say, yes, we do feel added interest in, you know, what we do and just general in volcanoes and lava now after all the activity that has been going on the Reykjanes Peninsula. But the idea was actually born back in 2010 during a volcanic eruption that me and my husband witnessed. So it was not the infamous Eyjafjallajökull eruption that, you know, famously stopped air traffic for all of Europe, or ultimately the world, really. It was actually in the same system, but happened about a month earlier. And it happened in a mountain ridge called Fimmvörðuháls. And it was one of these, what you would call a tourist eruption. So, you know, we were actually able to hike up there and witness this for ourselves. And it so happened that that particular eruption produced the highest ever recorded lava fall in history.
You mean the greatest amount of lava?
No, the lava fall, as in waterfall.
Oh, I
except
see.
You swap water with lava. So there was literally lava cascading down a mountain hill and into a canyon. And we saw that. And I mean, this was the first time that me and my husband had seen a volcanic eruption live. You know, despite what most people may think, you know, that us in Iceland have like eruptions every 2 days or something, that's actually not the case.
No. Feels like it sometimes.
It feels like it. I mean, it's been incredibly active lately.
Every 2 months, maybe.
Yeah. But this is not the norm.
No.
The norm in
no.
Iceland is that there is an eruption every 2 to 4 years. And not all of them are accessible in any way or form.
No.
And many of them can be quite big and dangerous. So, you know, this was the first time that we actually saw this. And we saw this spectacle. And we were completely mesmerized. And I remember, like, basically on the way back, we were already talking, like, wow, you know, everyone should be able to experience this. Everyone should be able to witness real lava and feel the heat and see the glow and hear the sounds and everything. So that was basically the inspiration for the show.
But did it seem possible? Because when you see that happening in nature for the first time and then think, okay, we want to replicate this artificially, I wouldn't know where to begin. Did you?
We did not. No. We're not engineers and we're actually not geologists or anything like that.
That's
it's more like I would say I'm just a massive lava nerd.
But you are Lady Lava, and you were telling me your husband, who I met briefly, Julius, is Mr. Lava Lava.
Exactly,
yes,
yeah.
Okay.
So we have always been incredibly fascinated with volcanoes and with lava. And I mean, I think for Icelanders generally, you know, it's so ingrained in our history and in our culture, you know, everything that has to do with the volcanoes and how it's impacted life basically throughout the ages in Iceland. So I would say generally, you know, the typical average Icelander knows more about volcanoes and lava than probably the average person in the world. Added to that, we are both extreme science nerds. We love this kind of stuff. I was even at some point in time considering if I should study geology, did not take that path, but you know, so it's always been an interest of mine, and the same goes basically for my husband. And you know, back then we are optimists by nature. We were sure we were able to figure that out somehow.
Yes.
You know, that there would be someone out there somewhere in the world that would have the sufficient know-how to help us make it happen.
Help you melt rocks.
Yeah, essentially. And we did find, actually, that guy in the States, it so happens. So there was a professor, two of them, actually, in Syracuse University in basically New York State, who were melting lava for science. And when we happened to find out that they were doing that purely for scientific reasons, we reached out and asked them to collaborate, and that's what happened. Basically.
We're going to go and see the furnace in a couple of minutes, but why Vík first of all? Because you opened up there 6 years ago and here in Reykjavík 2 years ago. Why did you start on the south coast?
Well, if I'm being 100% honest, it was not the initial idea.
Okay.
We always planned on opening first in Reykjavík. So
it's very warm in here. We'll explain why in a minute.
Yes. Yeah, so actually, you know, we always wanted to open up in Reykjavík, but as a like very young family startup, not really with any means of funds or anything, everything, like all the facilities that we found were too expensive, not really fitting for the purpose of, you know, what we needed to do.
Yes.
Which is actually the reason for the sound that you hear in the background, you know. So I would say ultimately, two people, Ragnar Guðgeirs and Hildur Árnadóttir, whom we had known through my previous job, actually, they ended up contacting us, having heard about our business idea, and they are from Vík. And actually, my husband happens to be from that area as well.
Okay.
And actually, my husband's great-grandfather and Ragnar's grandfather were actually together as farmers back in 1918, herding sheep really close to Mýrdalsjökull, which is the glacier that hides the mighty Katla volcano.
Yes.
When Katla erupted last time in 1918, and they had to run for their lives.
Yes, and we're going to talk about some of the other areas of volcanic activity outside of the Reykjanes Peninsula, which would have a much more serious effect on day-to-day life than what we've seen in Reykjanes. We're going to get to that, but the noise that we hear is the furnace. So this is the engine room of it all. We're standing above where we've just been.
Yep.
And you were telling me that this giant metal cube, which is the furnace, which has the lava glass or the rock melting inside it just now, this whole thing turns 90 degrees on its side, and the lava pours out of the hole that I can see in front of us.
Yeah, so it's basically a steel box, and well, it doesn't turn 90 degrees, more like 40,
okay.
Maybe 45.
On its side.
Yeah, it does tilt. So we actually, I really want to make that point as well, because we're incredibly proud of that. We are actually melting the lava with biogenerated methane gas that we get in collaboration with Sorpa, the local waste and recycling company. So we're using green energy.
This is green lava.
This is green lava, exactly.
What temperature are we talking about in there? Because we're standing maybe, I don't know, 5-6 meters away, and it's uncomfortably hot for me.
Yeah, yes. So the lava, the melting point of lava is between 950 and 1150 degrees Celsius. So we actually need to get the lava up to a little bit hotter than that to make sure that it's molten all the way through and will actually pour beautifully down into the showroom. So I would say we probably have around 1200, 1250 degrees, you know, inside of the furnace.
And is that big box, which is about, I don't know, 4 meters by 4 meters by 6, I think, something like that, is that full of lava just now? How much is in there?
No, it's actually just the bottom
just
part.
The bottom half.
So there's a lot of engineering and mechanism inside of it. And this furnace is actually specifically refurbished for melting lava. Like, you're not really going to contact any company in the world and like, hey, can I get one lava melting furnace?
No.
You know, there's no such thing.
Well, I guess there are two, and you've got them both, and the other one's
exactly.
In Vík, right?
Yes. So, you know, we had to work really closely with, you know, certain companies to really make a lot of changes, because lava behaves, for instance, this furnace is made by a company that generally makes furnaces for steel melting or aluminium melting, primarily for the automobile industry, in fact. And they were just so intrigued by the fact that, you know, we were asking them that, you know, they sort of let go of their usual sort of minimum a number of furnaces that you need to purchase, because they were just like, you're gonna do what? So this steel box is basically like would typically be melting steel, but yes. Steel behaves very, very differently from lava. So just a little bit of science nerdy geek kind of a stuff here, but steel, as an example, conducts heat. Lava actually does the opposite. It's constantly trying to keep its own heat inside, and that was one of the main challenges, I would say, to figure out how to actually get it molten and then keep it molten.
Yes, because you've got a device that's made of one substance which behaves differently from the thing that you were trying to deal with.
Yeah.
It's -7 degrees, I think, today in Reykjavik outside. I've got no memory of what that feels like standing here because it's so warm.
Yeah, well, I can tell you, on a warm summer day in Iceland, and there are not many, it can get pretty toasty in here.
Yes,
you know,
I think
that's
so.
Why it's very good to have this very big door that we can open here.
Yes.
Just to let in a little bit of a breeze. Yeah.
Well, let's step back outside because I want to just quickly talk about some of the other volcanoes that we've mentioned. And we're coming into the lounge here, which is upstairs, and this is an area where people can come if they want to see the show and have a little bit of a more luxurious, relaxed experience, I guess, beforehand. Yep.
So this is our lounge. This is what we call our premium lounge, and this is where we have customers who want to come and maybe, you know, treat themselves a little bit to like a drink and maybe learn a little bit more about how we do things.
Let's take one of these very comfortable sofas and have a conversation about some of the other volcanoes, because there is obviously so much attention on Reykjanes because we have seen, and we think it's 6 or 7 eruptions in the last year in 2024. We're going to double check that because even you working in the field and us working at Ruv, we lose count. There have been so very many. But we know that another one is imminent. We know that the amount of magma under Svartsengi has now reached the level which generally indicates either a magma flow or an eruption. Mm-hmm. And just on that terminology, first of all, it is possible, isn't it, that magma can flow under the ground without there being an eruption. I think that happened once last year.
Yes, so that actually is, the technical term for that is a dike intrusion. That is essentially when lava is going upwards through the crust, but doesn't necessarily breach the surface, you know. And there can also be like horizontal movements, and then it's called a sill. Not that we need to go into details, but yes, you can basically have movements of magma moving inside of the crust of the earth and not really leading to an eruption.
In fact, I think the day that we had that last year was the final of Sungvakeppnin, and I was scheduled to do the English language commentary for Sungvakeppnin, and about 4 o'clock we got news of this magma intrusion, which usually or very often becomes an eruption, and we were thinking, how do we cover both of these things? Yeah. Happily, of course, only one of them happened.
Yeah, that must have been interesting.
It was an interesting day.
Well, I will say, in Iceland, this is actually more common than in most other places around the world, because Iceland happens to be sitting on a divergent, tectonic plate. So
they're
Iceland
moving apart.
Yeah. Is constantly moving apart, like, you know, sort of split in two, and, you know, by approximately 2.5 centimeters per year, the crust is moving apart. So there's constantly these cracks that are basically forming in the crust that, you know, magma is trying to fill up. Earth is really trying to, if you look at it like healing itself, you know. So that is the natural process of things in Iceland. That happens very often. And magma isn't necessarily always like keen on going all the way to the surface, but it seems now with the Reykjanes Peninsula that we've entered a phase where, you know, the pathway to the surface, the crust has become so fragmented because of all of the earthquakes.
It's weaker, isn't it?
Yes. So now, you know, basically the experts are really saying that, you know, it's extremely easy for the magma to get all the way to the surface, and even without any particular activity that usually precedes that, such as like an earthquake swarm.
Yeah.
So now the sort of warning period before anything happening can be as short as like 15, 20, 30 minutes.
As we've seen in recent eruptions. Yeah. Now let's just move back to November of 2023 when things started to feel very serious.
Yeah.
Because
November 10th.
November the 10th, which was when Grindavik was evacuated,
yes.
Again at very short notice.
Yes.
But that was as much about the earthquakes as it was about the volcanic eruption. Normally the earthquakes are mild and they just are an indicator of what's going to happen. In the case of Grindavik, the earthquakes themselves did the damage.
Yeah, the thing is, what was actually happening there under the surface was that there was a massive dike intrusion, what we just talked about earlier, you know, that was taking place. And because it was the first time that that was happening in this area in a very, very long time,
yes.
That's what caused all of the earthquakes. Because, you know, when magma, which is basically just molten rock, I mean, it's heavy, you know, there's a lot of, you know, stuff happening down there, you know, there's a lot of pressure. And somehow that pressure needs to release, and that happens in the form of these earthquakes.
Yes.
Because magma is essentially just squeezing its way, you know, and I would say that it was incredibly close call that, you know, magma actually didn't breach the surface and lava started flowing during that
in the
particular
town?
Day. Yes,
yeah.
It was, I think, at some places, the experts were estimating that the magma was just like 500 meters below the surface. And 500 meters in, you know, geological terms is nothing.
No.
It's like basically like the width of a hair.
Grindavik evacuated, as it has been many times. People are now back in the town, of course, which is excellent, but a lot of people are wondering if they want to live in a town where that risk persists. Yeah. We have seen seismic activity. I think I'm right in saying, on average, it's moved north of the town since then, so there's less of a risk to the town. Of course, the 4,000 inhabitants of Grindavik are always going to be on edge every time this happens. All of that notwithstanding, it is the case, isn't it? And we'll address this to anyone listening internationally, that it's perfectly possible for these eruptions to take place on the Reykjanes Peninsula without there being any impact on people in Iceland other than perhaps in the town of Grindavik.
Yeah, so again, going a little bit into the technical details here, but basically, like, the eruptions that are taking place on the Reykjanes Peninsula, they are what we call effusive eruptions, which is basically the opposite to explosive eruptions. And what that basically means is that, you know, the earth sort of unzips itself in a long fissure and lava starts, you know, bursting out and then just flowing. So there's no explosions, there's no ash clouds, there's nothing much happening except in the immediate area where, you know, the lava is basically flowing. Sure, there can be cracks opening in the immediate area again.
Yeah.
There can be, of course, the danger of lava, and there can be these, you know, gases. That's definitely a danger that people need to be mindful of. But in terms of a greater area than just the vicinity of, you know, the exact eruption, then there's really no danger. And I mean, these eruptions have been taking place, you know, like 20, 30 kilometers away from the capital area of Reykjavik. And like,
and only 10 from the airport.
Exactly, even less from the airport.
Yes.
And yet, you know, it has had almost no impact on air traffic. And now we're getting so, I wouldn't say used to it, but almost that, you know, the procedure for, like, because we have these aviation codes or levels where, you know, you have like green basically means that, you know, all the volcanoes are just happily chilling, you know, nothing much going on. Once it's yellow, it's basically like, okay, something may be about to happen. It's like, you know, we might see an eruption happening soon, or there are some signs. And then once it goes to orange or red, then, you know, it may have some impact on air traffic. And orange usually means that there is like an eruption going on, but not significant impact on air traffic. And that's what's been happening there.
Yeah, and none of these have caused any problems at all. In fact, it is, and again, a lot of people internationally are amazed by this, that you can fly in a commercial airliner over an erupting volcano without any issue at all. The key to that, as we've said, is that ash is not produced by these. However, and you mentioned it earlier on, Eyjafjallajökull in 2010, this was a very different eruption. This was the one that closed airspace across much of northern Europe for about 3 weeks, I think, because it threw so much ash into the air. That's because it happened under a glacier.
Yes, that's precisely it. Basically, you know, here in Iceland, we have I would say, over half of all of the volcanoes covered by ice. And when you have, and we're not just talking about like snow, we're talking like ice sheet, a thick sheet of ice, so a glacier essentially. And the thing is, what happens there is there's a few elements that come into play. First of all, the lava is trying to go up, and lava is incredibly hot, right? So what happens is that it starts melting the ice from below. And when the ice becomes water, and that water gets in contact with the lava, it basically creates these massive explosions. And this is like an infinite process that it's just like building and building and building. And ultimately, once the lava breaks through the ice sheet, you know, this explosivity that is happening, you know, up until that point underneath the ice sheet, bursts into the air in the form of incredibly tiny particles of lava.
And this is what happened in 2010. The threat was to aircraft engines. If this very fine dust, almost this lava dust, had got into the engines, then planes would have fallen out of the sky. So there was a very great fear of that happening. Looking around Iceland just now, we've got Bárðarbunga, which is rumbling away. We've got Katla, which is, you know, threatening to erupt on a sort of century-long scale. What's your assessment if we go around them quickly, one by one? Which ones are you watching?
I mean, there's a lot of them, actually, that I would say are like, it's time. My personal favorite volcano is Katla. Katla volcano in the south. It's actually the next door neighbor to Eyjafjallajökull.
Yes.
And one of the main reasons for Katla being so interesting to me is, well, first of all, it's the focus volcano of the lava show in Vík. So almost the entire storyline about that show is about Katla volcano and what impact she can have. But I would also say it's because she actually is the mother of the biggest volcanic eruption in Icelandic history, the Eldgjár eruption that happened 939, I think.
And this did have an effect.
And this did have an effect, yes, absolutely. And then, you know, and actually, like, not to scare anyone, because like we here in Iceland, we are relatively calm about this. There are always warning signs, you know. Usually there is some lead time up to something happening. You know, it doesn't just erupt out of the blue. But I would say, you know, Katla compared to Eyjafjallajökull, because they're neighbors.
Yes.
They're literally like next door, or like next to each other. And Eyjafjallajökull is usually, by local standards, considered to be a relatively innocent volcano, whereas Katla has a caldera that is twice the size of the Reykjavik, like big Reykjavik area.
Is it completely under the glacier?
Completely,
Katla?
Yes.
Okay.
But what sometimes happens is that, you know, there's a dike intrusion that leads from away from the ice, and then, you know, it's just a regular effusive eruption with lava flowing.
Unless it erupts under the sea, which is another
possibility. Another thing that actually happened back in, you know, in the 70s with Surtsey erupting. But because you were asking about, you know, what other volcanoes are we watching right now? I mean, Katla for sure. She basically last erupted in 1918, and up until that point, she had erupted on average every 50 years or so. And now it's been 106 years. So, you know, she's way overdue. I would say also Bárðarbunga is one of the bigger eruptions. And I mean, it's time.
And just remind us where that is.
Yeah, so Vatnajökull Glacier is the biggest glacier in Europe. And it actually holds several volcanic systems. The most active volcanic system in Iceland is Grímsvötn, which is one of them, underneath the glacier Vatnajökull. So Grímsvötn has historically erupted every 10 years, and it last erupted in 2011. So Grímsvötn is definitely one to watch. Bárðarbunga, again, is a little bit farther north, also under Vatnajökull glacier. And that one, like, it's basically this area of Iceland is located right on top of the mantle plume that is continuously feeding, you know, magma from way deep inside the earth up until the surface. So if I go back a little bit, you know, there are these two elements that, or aspects, that are primarily the reason why Iceland is one of the most active volcanic places in the world. It's because of the mid-Atlantic ridges and the tectonic plates, you know, moving away from each other, like we talked about earlier. And then it's on top of that, the fact that we are sitting right on top of a mantle plume.
Yes. But these other eruptions, the potential ash eruptions, as you said, there will be much more warning of those than we're going to get potentially in Reykjanes, where, as you say, the warning period has been as little as 30 minutes, maybe.
Yeah, and the reason is because now the, like in the Reykjanes Peninsula, you know, the earth has already
become so fragmented,
yeah, that, you know, the pathway to the surface for the magma is so easy. Like, there's not a lot of blockages, if you will. Mm-hmm. However, that is not necessarily the case for these big volcanoes, these central volcanoes that we have, you know, like Katla, Grímsvötn, Bárðarbunga, Askja. You know, there are several that potentially have been showing signs that, you know, they may be about to burst. And there are always going to be earthquake swarms. There's always going to be like an uplift. We call it ground deformation, where, you know, there's GPS basically data showing that slowly. We're talking millimeters here.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, over time it builds, and that basically indicates that, you know, magma is sort of already building up.
There are lots of reasons to be very cautious about Google Translate, but one of my favorite Google translations is of the Icelandic word landris, which talks about the land rising.
Exactly.
And it translates it as the land giant.
Yes.
I love that.
And it's the same with eldgos. Sometimes it's fire sota.
Yes.
Because gos means sota, but it can also mean like eruption.
Yes, yes, yes. So there may be some poetic moments poking through those Google translations. So in summary then, if anyone's planning a trip to Iceland, there's no need to worry either about the ash eruptions, because there'll be plenty of notice of those. And as we've said, the eruptions taking place on the Reykjanes Peninsula do not affect air travel anyway.
No, exactly. And thank you for saying this, because there's been a lot of misinformation out there, a lot of incredibly dramatic headlines, you know, with, you know, sayings such as like Iceland is splitting in half or something crazy like that, which is obviously not the case. We would not still be here, you know, with our families. Our kids are just going to school, we're just going to work. We're like, even like, I remember last time it erupted on the Reykjanes Peninsula, the main thing that I was wondering about was like, okay, what should I have for dinner? You know, it's these mundane, day-to-day normal things that we locals are thinking about. And I do understand that for us, this is very normal. But I would say to anyone considering visiting Iceland, this should excite you. We have all of these incredibly powerful volcanoes, and they are going to give warning signs. They are not immediately dangerous for anyone. And there's so much to learn. I think it's just fascinating.
And they are just part of an incredible natural ecosystem of dramatic events. And even if it's not possible, even if you are here when one of the eruptions goes off and it's not possible to see it because it's not in a tourist-friendly location, and indeed many of the eruptions on Reykjanes have not been, you can come here to the lava show and you can see lava being made, either here or in Vík. When are you open?
Yeah, exactly. And just to add to that, you know, we are incredibly passionate about educating people about Icelandic volcanoes and about, you know, how they have impacted our culture. I mean, of course, the main attraction is the lava and, you know, for people seeing that. But we also really want to share our passion for the volcanoes with the world, because we think they are incredible, right? Incredible beings. Fascinating, dangerous, of course, but so, so interesting. And we basically are open every single day of the year. We have show times every 2 hours. So basically in Reykjavik, they start at 10 usually, and the last one is at 8 in the evening. In Vík, we usually start at 11, and the last one is at 7. So, you know, if you want to know more about Icelandic volcanoes and how we, the locals, have learned to live with them,
well,
you know,
the lounge is filling up with excited visitors who are about to learn all about the process. Do you take the shows yourself, or is that in the hands of the lava master?
So my husband used to do all of them.
Uh-huh.
That's why he is Mr. Lava Lava.
Okay.
You know, when we were starting out as a small startup, you know, we were basically doing all of the tasks, whether it was, you know, doing the show or like taking the phone or whatever it was, sending invoices, stuff like that.
Yes.
But now, actually, we have lava masters, who most of them are actually either geologists or in the process of becoming ones. So we pride ourselves of having incredibly knowledgeable, talented people who work for us and also have a passion for volcanoes. I think it's so important that, you know, to have people working on this who themselves clearly are passionate about the topic, right? And then want to share that with others.
And I think that's becoming obvious in Icelandic tourism, that there is a line, you know, dividing, I guess, the tour operators who don't maybe have the passion for their subject and those who plainly do, such as the lava show. I think it's obvious both here and in Vik. Raga, thank you very much. Lady Lava, thank you very much for spending half an hour in our company today on Roof English Radio.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And as I say, we're having our conversation on Wednesday, the same day that it's going to be published, which is the 29th, I think we're on today, 29th of January. Yep. What's your... If you had to estimate, when is the next eruption on the Reykjanes Peninsula?
Ooh, that's always a fun question. I mean, there's no way of knowing exactly when an eruption starts or when it ends.
But
I've been saying since November that I think it's going to happen, you know, sometime in between the 10th and the 15th of February. And actually, I have an additional reason for that. I would probably not be in the country. And it has been happening a lot lately that when I happen to leave, stuff happens.
Maybe we should have that up on the website at Roof then, whether you're in the country or not, as an indication of whether there's going to be an eruption.
Very unscientific indication, sure, but yeah.
Seems to point that way. Raga, thanks very much indeed.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Details of the lava show here in Reykjavik and also in Vík. Links to both of those on the page accompanying the show from Roof English Radio. My name's Darren Adam and you can get in touch anytime. We're english@ruv.is.
There is more from Roof English with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. Roof English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, Roof.